Welcome to Just the Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is visionary leader Don Larson. Don is founder and CEO of the Sunshine Nut Company and author of The Sunshine Approach. He has over 25 years of experience in the food processing industry, including as an executive for the Hershey Company. Don's 13 years at Hershey were in turnaround assignments in manufacturing, industrial engineering, strategic sourcing, global sourcing, commodities trading, new product introductions, and project management. After leaving Hershey, he built a cocoa processing plant for a group of private investors. After 24 months in a promotion to acting CEO, he delivered a plant that produced $100 million per year. That factory was the largest fully automated cocoa processing line in the world. I think you get the idea that Don is the type of person that gets things done. So Don, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
Super. So you have a unique, broad story that we'll attempt to break down and enlighten our listeners with. So let's go pretty far back here. And as I understand, the Sunshine Nut story begins when you moved your family to Mozambique over 7 years ago. So if you could share with us how you came to build a company that is really, as we'll learn, completely reinventing the intent and purpose of even existing. So take us all the way back to how you started Sunshine Nut Company.
Yeah, I think it really started during my days as director of cocoa operations for Hershey, you know, and heading to Africa and just seeing the potential in Africa and really the poverty of the people. You know, it's like, while we were providing a market for millions of cocoa farmers, you know, based on the market rates, you know, I wanted to get closer. And, you know, I was somewhat disillusioned with just corporate life and moving up and successful. The factory that I built was sold off to the largest chocolate maker in the world. And I had a chance to say, what do I really want to do next? And it was to help people, you know, and to help some of the poorest and people get basically come out of poverty, not through handouts and charity, but through hard work, dignified jobs, opportunities, and the ability for them to earn their way out of poverty. So that's where I developed the Sunshine Approach. And after I developed it, I'm like, well, it's time to put this into practice. And so my wife and I, along with our youngest child of three, two we left in the States, which is a very hard thing. We pretty much sold everything off and moved to what's considered, you know, one of the hardest places to live. It was the third poorest at the time, Mozambique, Africa, because they had a history of cashews and they had been number one, but a civil war and, you know, some banking regulations just decimated the industry. So it's my hopes to bring that industry back from Mozambique for the benefit of the farmers, the country, and everything else.
So share with me the business model that you're operating on your profit distribution, and really how it's unique. As I understand, it's not a sole proprietor or a group of shareholders that are seeking to just maximize profit and so on. Share with me the business model and approach that you're taking.
Yeah, so this is actually a business model that I'm speaking to quite a number of groups, the World Economic Forum, the Nobel Peace Prize Forum, European Economic Summit, United Nations. I've been around talking about this model, and initially they thought that I was completely insane, that, you know, there's a lot of laughter in the rooms. Now things are starting to get underway. And the business model is based on taking care of the smallholder farmer first. So it is revolves around developing a market for farmers that really are sustenance farmers, you know, that are some of the poorest in the world. And the crops can range. There's so many different crops, but I chose cashews because it's known as the poor man's crop, the rich man's food. And it is grown in areas that the people are devastatingly poor. So in addition to developing that market, what I wanted to do is develop trust in the locations that I would go to. So, and also have impact for not only the farmers, but my employees, and for some of the fundamental issues of each country. For Mozambique, 10% of the country is orphaned. And I think about 10% additional are abandoned children. And then I think 10% of the population is probably older women that are just struggling to survive, whether it be widowed or abandoned. But you see them everywhere, just out with their little gardens they call mashambas, just trying to eke out a living for them to live. And so our model is based around helping all of them. But one of the things I did when I developed this business model is I did it in a fair trade coffee shop in the first fair trade town in America, Media, Pennsylvania. And I remember looking at the $5 chocolate bars and being an ex-Hershey exec, I'm like, that chocolate bar tastes like wax and they're charging $5 for it. And people are buying it, but they're buying it to help people. And the premise of this whole venture was to make world-class food products that were extremely fresh, that were high-quality premium products that offered something unique at a price point that was competitive. So, you know, what we do then is when we sell those products, the company, when it has profits, that 90% of the profits, the distributed profits to the shareholders, are actually go back into the country to do good. So we have projects going on all over. You know, we have projects in Mozambique to take care of the poor farming communities, but also the orphan population issues.
Wow. And are you, do you know how many lives you've touched? I mean, struggling on how to ask it because I don't want to, you know, quantify something that's so beneficial, but I mean, it's dozens, hundreds, thousands.
We've only been business. We've hit the States 3 years. And so our profits aren't where they will be in the future because of all the unramping, you know, the issues with just establishing a presence. And so we have done work, and probably the work that I'm proudest of is, you know, when we scale and get this big, we're going to be doing 30% of our distributed profits to orphan care. And we support 3 or 4 existing orphanages. And one of the things we found was, you know, they just didn't have the love or the family environment that we wanted to see. So our real focus is on what we call sunshine houses, where we buy a home. Most of our employees that we hire, and one of the targets is for us to hire young men and women who had previously been abandoned or orphaned in their youth. Now they're over the age of 20. We're teaching them valuable food processing skills. I actually have an all Mozambican staff that's running the factory. I can disappear for months, and they are running at the highest level of food safety certification. We have our FSSC 22,000 food safety certification. Yesterday, we got audited successfully without me even being there. A European auditor came in and assessed our whole operation. So you can understand the confidence that I have in the staff if I'm not there. But what we do is we purchase these homes, we renovate them, and then we pair a widow with 3 or 4 orphans, and we create a family unit. And it's in a Mozambican neighborhood, in a Mozambican culture. We put them in private school, you know, and so far, you know, we've got a few sunshine houses. They're just going wonderfully well, to the point that the government is very excited and meeting with us and wanting to give us lots more orphans. So we have to sell cashews in order to take on and do these sunshine houses. And in addition, we take care of the farming communities. We've done thousands of cashew tree plantings where my employees and I get in vehicles and we head up north into cashew country. You know, these are people who have, you know, grass huts with stick walls, grass roofs, mud floors. You know, they are some of the poorest of the poor. And what we're looking to do is give them trees for free, plant them with them. And so that tree starts giving cashews in about 3 years, and it will give income to a poor farming family for about 50 years. So those are the types of projects. We call them hand-up type projects, you know, instead of handouts. So that's a large part. You know, just our 50 employees at the roasting factory mean that 1,000 people are shelled or are employed to shell the cashews. And our factory at full capacity means that 50,000 farming families are selling their harvest for use at our facility. So there's a multiplicative effect to just putting the roasting factory in country.
Wow. So you're creating jobs, you're providing families direct sources of income so that by selling the products, and then you're also contributing through the projects to whether it's for orphans or others that need assistance, you're contributing. So as you said, there's multiple angles that you're helping a country that is in dire need. So when you started, I'm attempting to grab maybe a few lessons learned here. I'm going to imagine that it wasn't easy, and I'll also imagine that Mozambique's infrastructure, whether that's sources of power or logistics, what we have here or benefit from in the United States, and that perhaps the government is organized in a different way. What were some of the early hurdles that you came across, and how did you solve them so that anyone else that is considering this path, may be able to gain some insight from?
Yeah, well, okay. So this year, the World Economic scored Mozambique along with every other country in the world. And Mozambique was the second to worst in the doing business competitiveness rating.
Wow.
So, and it's when we moved there, it was the third poorest nation in the world. And this year, also InterNations, or last year, which is an expatriate type of organization, ranked Mozambique as the second worst in the world for expatriates living there. So, we are working in conditions that are less than ideal. But, one of the things that we model is integrity, honesty, dignity. And so the usual or the issues that have plagued Africa and developing countries have been bribes, corruption, things like that. Well, we refuse to take part in anything like that. And so it's taken longer in some cases to get the permits that we've needed. But I'm just not looking at getting through things. I'm actually looking to make examples out of, obstacles that get in our way so that others can follow behind. So we've been very vocal. One of the things that helps is the fact that I give 90% back. And I have some senior level government officials that are very excited about what I'm doing. And so they will intervene at some times when I need them to. To say, do you understand what this man is doing for our country? And it usually clears the way pretty quickly. And so what we're doing is modeling integrity, ethics. And, as far as the infrastructure, the key word is contingency. So I put in big water tanks, and I put in uninterruptible power supply combined with a generator, with a voltage regulator. So we can pretty much be cut off from the outside world and run our operation, even in a hurricane type scenario. So I've had contingencies. I've developed, the logistics. I've developed a factory in a box concept that I can replicate this thing very quickly. We developed, the food safety program that is now at the highest level of food safety certification. So everything is kind of put in place for us to excel and to move forward into other countries that have, similar circumstances.
Tell us about the Mozambique people a little bit. What have you learned from them?
The Mozambican people, despite the conditions that they're in, they're full of joy, one of the things that comes is, you come to help them. And, a lot of times people come to help themselves, so there is a somewhat level of distrust, and that's kind of what enters into, you know, some of the bribery and the corruption. It's like, well, if you're going to profit off of us, we're going to profit off you as well. So I've been able to break through and gain trust. You know, one of the things we're doing is most of the charity, or a lot of the charity, comes in the form of giving out, you know, and so instead of building independence, they build dependence, you know, instead of giving hand ups like we do, they give handouts. So instead of us concentrating on, we want you to earn things, they become entitled, you know, so that type of opportunity that we offer provides hope, whereas they, you know, the adversity that they're in kind of builds despair. So everything, you know, I do a quadruple bottom line business model, which is the Sunshine Approach model that has, you know, the standard triple bottom line these days of financial, environmental, and social. But I've added a fourth objective of transformation so that everything we do, we look at it from how is it doing a long-lasting conversion or a transformation? Like when doctors call me, I don't want you going out and just treating people. I want you training the doctors there to be better doctors. The teachers that come, I want you educating not students, but I want you educating the teachers, and those teachers will touch thousands, and so on and so on and so on. You know, so our hope is, you know, to help the Mozambicans help themselves, bring dignity, bring excellence instead of worthlessness and failure. So those are kind of the principles of interacting with the Mozambican people. You know, it's hard to live right next door to people who are in significant poverty and suffering and to be friends with them. You know, we have sold off everything and we'll probably never go back to even close to the level of lifestyle that we had because we see these people suffering, you know, and so my hope is that we sell as much product as we possibly can and that we solve people's kind of their level of where they're at in ways that not just get them out of that lifestyle, but get them out in a way that brings, you know, that builds their, you know, their dignity and the desire to be independent and to kind of earn their way to a transformation and a better life.
Wow. So shifting to the product a little bit, and just the marketing of it and you know, getting it into retail and sell through and all that. Your product appears a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, you know, priced at a little bit of a premium relative to other notes. I say that based on no research, but I kind of glance and you know, we enjoy cashews here in this family, and I'm saying it seems a little bit. However, obviously you're adding, you know, value to the consumer to consider that extends well beyond the food product itself. So relative to price point, has that been a challenge for retailers to overcome? Or are they kind of receptive to the potential notion here that a product, you know, priced a little bit above, but with a unique value proposition, is worth stocking on the shelves?
Yeah, now it depends on which distribution channel you're in. So we initially went into Ahold, which was Giant, Stop and Shop, and Martin's on the East Coast. In fact, in 2012, I had a visit from a senior executive at Whole Foods who I like to say discovered us, you know, and that developed a great relationship. We've got a good relationship there. You know, we're in Wegmans, we're in HEB, you know, Myers. I think you're out on the West Coast, right?
So, yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. From the East Coast, though, so I'm
okay. So we are just going into Sprouts, and we've been in Raley's.
Yeah.
You know, Earth Fair. So we're in a lot, and the price point has been actually pretty competitive. You know, there are some difference when we get into the independent grocers. You know. And through the distributors that the suggested retail price is a little bit higher. But pretty much we're competitive with the big guys. Might be a little bit more. But what we offer is this distinctly different product, and there's good reason for that. You know, one of the things I'm finding, and it's been the case with most of the retail buyers, is when they try our product, they can't believe how fresh it is and crunchy. And the reason for that is we are right there where the product is shelled. So the minute it is shelled out of its very hard and protective shell, we get it into a premium package with nitrogen flushing. It's a foil package that retains the freshness. And that is a distinct difference. And, you know, the retail buyers who their job is to buy nuts, you know, I've had comments like, "Don, you've ruined me. I love cashews. I eat them all the time. But now that I've been eating your cashews, anytime I stop at a convenience store or elsewhere and I pick up someone else's, I realize that I've been eating stale and soggy cashews my entire life." So it's really been a re-education. You know, I'm on QVC now every month, you know, selling the product. And I've gotten some complaints. "These cashews are hard," you know, even though most of them are five-star reviews. People don't understand that when a cashew is put, well, first of all, when it's shelled in India or Vietnam, it goes into plastic. And it sits for months as it makes its way over to the roasters. You know, it's months before that product is roasted and put it into a package. And most of the packages that it goes into are plastic packaging that lets through air and moisture. Well, a cashew, when you set it out, it takes on the air and the moisture and it becomes soft and what I perceive as stale. You know, and that's some of the problems even with a bulk bin. So we were doing bulk for a while and I discontinued it because it goes away from who we are as a premium, fresh, crunchy, flavorful cashew.
Well, I can affirm that I have been eating soggy cashews for most of my life. And I think it's kind of it joins a long list of, I think, foods that Americans don't realize that they're not tasting, you know, what true quality is, that just because a food is, you know, common or ubiquitous, it doesn't mean that that is the good or correct kind. There's a particular, I'm going to tread lightly here, but there's a particular nut that is greenish tinged right now that's quite popular. You can buy it everywhere and they're just not good. But just because it's available and it's got an end cap everywhere doesn't mean that, that it's good. So you know, the big picture here, it's fascinating. Don, I'm humbled. I want to say that right now, by what you've chosen to do. And it's causing me to reframe how we look at you know, charity, as a broad term. And I suppose that we all have two options here. One is, well, three options. One is do nothing. Two is you write a check, right? Which I think we all do, whether that's locally or for more, you know, global issues. And I think you assume that, you know, you write that check and I don't know, 40% is probably going to overhead and operations, which is understandable. It happens. 60% goes somewhere and you never quite totally know. But you also, as a check writer, don't necessarily get anything back. I mean, there's an altruistic value there, but I'm not sure if it was Nietzsche or who said it, that, you know, there's no true altruism because we, even just the act of giving, gives our own egos some pleasure. But at least
that's right.
As I think about, you know, that this exchange of value here, I need to buy cashews anyways, right? Or what have you. I think this business model can extend elsewhere. So, you know, I think the question is, if I'm going to pay, I'm going to make this number up, $10 a bag of cashews, a nice round number. I know that a certain percentage of that is going to go somewhere other than to cashews. And it's the profit, it's the employees, it's might just go to cash, it might go to pay down debt, who knows. And so now we're looking at it where we all consume things, whether that's shoes, cashews, and, you know, certainly there's wants and needs, but when it comes to the needs, I would put, you know, cashews and eating nuts is something that we kind of need. If we could make better decisions on how we choose to contribute, you might not get the handsome little tax deduction at the end of the year, but why not take a portion of your grocery bill and have the certainty that you're getting what you were going to buy anyways. And, you know, I don't know, you spend $100 at the grocery store. Why not identify ways for $20 of that to be able to go to orphans in Mozambique and so on? It's just not sure where I'm entirely going with it, but it's a different look at charity without it feeling like charity. And maybe that's one of the keys how we can unlock more of this. I don't know if you subscribe, you know, compassionate capitalism, you hear different words thrown around.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if I could just comment on that, you know, what I'm looking to do is have a win-win-win for everyone. I'm looking to get the price by cutting out middlemen, you know, the transport and the packaging and repackaging in the middle process. When you locate yourself right at the farmer level and you take out the middlemen that are taking a portion of the profit, but also adding a lot of handling and transport, and you go right to that source and you develop a product that is ultra fresh because you're right there. You've got to win in that it's a premium product. You're taking care of giving people jobs, supplying a market and competition for smallholder farmers to encourage them to go from a sustenance type farming to actually a cash crop and plant more trees. But then all the way through the process, whether it's my employees, every part that's gained, the spices and the packaging, everything is, it's coming from developing countries, you know, so we're looking at sourcing as much as we can from Mozambique. So all the way until it hits the container to head over to the U.S., you know, it is adding value to people's lives, you know, and the great thing about what we're doing is we're encouraging. We've got distributors that are coming over to Mozambique. I have partnerships with some retailers who want to do more and send teams over, you know, to help us and to learn. So, and then the consumers, you know, we get wonderful emails, great reviews of people who are truly touched and want to do more, you know, and we get a lot of donations into our, you know, we have a 501c3 charity, which was put together, the Sunshine Approach Foundation, principally for the company, Sunshine Nut Company, to give its proceeds into a charity so that we can get it back into Mozambique. But we have people donating to that. And you talk about 40 cents going. My wife, who runs the foundation, will not let anything go in there. You know, she makes sure that everything goes to the children, goes to the farming communities, you know, because, you know, she is touching their lives and takes a four-wheel drive into the villages every day. And does medical care, does all types of things, and she wants every penny that she can going straight to the actual people in need. So I like to consider a win-win-win, that people get a great tasting product that's competitively priced, and that it's doing good in the process, and it's also changing the way people do business and the way they think about business. So I'm glad that you're encouraged, Scott. I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's just incredible, thought provoking. And I said, it's humbling speaking here with you. So, what's next for Sunshine Nut Company? Is it sticking with cashews in Mozambique? I imagine you feel there's enough work there to be done. Are you, you know, seeking to, move into other areas or other food? What do you kind of see?
Well, there's so many different possibilities that I have to put blinders on. You know, my background is chocolate, but I also have spaghetti sauce company in my family. You know, so with onions and garlic and tomatoes, there's all the tomato-based products. With cocoa, there's chocolate. Cashews, you know, one of the things is the private label, you know, and I've got all of my retailers who want to be part of this also asking me, hey, can you do our private label brand? And I love the possibility of that I can get in and offer a really fresh product as a private label brand, in addition to Sunshine Nut Company brand being on the shelves as well. But the ability to to have more business so that I can impact a lot more people's lives for the better. So we're looking at all opportunities. We're looking at all the different other channels. We're predominantly in the retail channels. We have a lot of interest from the drug channel, drugstore channel, the convenience channel, the mass merchandiser channel. So even offshoots like the airline industry. So, you know, the problem that I have is how do I get the working capital to do all these things? So we're, you know, when you give away 90%, not many people want to give investments, you know, and this is a family business. My daughter just joined us. My son just joined us and we're all very excited about doing this for generations. So I want to keep it a bit family business focused on philanthropy. And so that can make it tough, but we're finding ways to do it. And so as fast as we can grow, we will grow.
Amazing. I can only imagine the lessons your own children have learned from this and how you're role modeling for them. So I want to make sure we get the website out there because if anyone is listening, they need to stop what they're doing now and go to sunshinenuts.com. You can read, you know, really the full story on there that we just barely scratched the surface of. Some amazing images of Dawn and your wife, Terry, you know, with some of the children and families in Mozambique. And of course, you can purchase product on there as well, which if I don't do it online now, I am pledging that I'm going to do it this weekend because I'm inspired, but I'm equally curious about what a good cashew is going to taste like. And we're going on a trip this weekend and typically like to load up on some good high calorie products to be able to have when we're on. So I'm going to definitely be looking at it. You mentioned, but let's mention again. So we get sunshinenuts.com and you rattled off Sprouts, Giant, Stop and Shop, Wegmans.
Yeah.
What else?
Right. Whole Foods, Earth Fare, Martin's, HEB, New Seasons Market, National Co-op Grocers, which is a large group of independent grocers, and same with the INFRA, which is Independent Natural Food Retailers Association, Raley's, Natural Grocers, Harmon's, I think, and probably a lot more that, you know, one of the things we're doing is we're a hit with the kind of the natural food and specialty food retailers. So there's a lot of independents out there that are buying our product.
Great. And those that aren't, and I'm not going to mention them, but there, some of them are obvious. I think they're on notice now that they're missing a great product that's giving back, reasonable price point. It checks all the boxes. So they need to get on board as well. So Don, I want to thank you for joining, sharing your story. It's incredibly humbling. Love to frankly meet you someday. It's just what motivates you each day. You know, obviously it comes from within and humanity, but I can only imagine there's something else that's driving you towards this, this incredible.
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. You know, and I will tell you that I was disillusioned and it wasn't through lack of success. I mean, I flew a hot air balloon that I owned for 25 years. I had my Porsche. I had so many different toys in my garage and down the driveway, and I sold everything off. And the thrill that I get now from helping people and seeing them, you know, just go from despair to hope and to, you know, just to have opportunity presented to themselves and for them to succeed, you know, it's got to be moved on. You know, you've got to get out and you got to demonstrate that you got to work hard, get yourself out of it. But there's no better feeling to see when people do that and they succeed. So I appreciate you giving me the time to talk about it.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, a Chef's Best Production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.